You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
I'm actually your host, Christina Long, today. We've got Matt Jones taking a little bit of a break this week. He will be back on Friday, and I'll be here in your host chair today, Monday, and on Wednesday and Thursday as well. And today on the show, we want to talk a little bit of Arkansas men's basketball. Anthony Christensen's going to join us over the phone. He was in Columbia for that last game. He was in Baton Rouge as well for the LSU game. Talk a little bit about what's ailing the men's basketball team now that they're 0-5 in SEC play after those two losses. You know, we set it up last week. We previewed the games, and we said you've got to have one of these, and they didn't have either of them. So we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on with the men's basketball team, what they've got coming up this week, and then Ethan Westerman will join me here in studio to talk some other spring sports. We'll talk a little softball, throw in a little gymnastics, a little track, why not? And then later on, we'll talk a little bit of kind of news items. The College Football National Championship is tonight, so we'll talk a little bit of picks there. I know our producer, Sydney, is very excited today to talk some Notre Dame. She'll hop on the mic probably from over in the booth. She's got her Notre Dame jersey on today. So it's an exciting day for Sydney. So we'll talk a little bit of football as well at the end of the show, too. But first, we're going to have Anthony Christensen join us on the phone. You know, he was in Columbia and was there for that. And Anthony, you wrote about how that 18-0 run that Missouri went on really kind of shaped the game. It was really the story of the game, and how it seemed like every time Arkansas would get something going, Missouri would just go on another run, and how that was kind of what happened in that game. And John Calipari talked a little bit about how what they were trying to do during that, specifically that really long run, trying to call timeouts, trying to, he said, stem the tide of Missouri's scoring, and they just never really could. So from your perspective, being at the game, you know, you, like I said, you wrote a little bit about what it was like being there and what it felt like in the moment, watching them just continue to score. How did that kind of shape that rest of the game?
I mean, I think I talked about it with Matt on Friday, just kind of previewing the game. Like, Missouri is a team that, you know, they can get hot quick, and if you're not ready for that, they're going to get on top and just kind of, they're going to run from there. I mean, look at what happened when they played at Florida. I know, obviously, that ended up being a one-point game, but they still won and led by, I think it was 19 points in the first half. So it's just, like, that's a team that can build leads and make it almost insurmountable really quickly if you're not ready to play. And talking to Adu Thiro after the game, that's like pretty bluntly what he said. Like, we came in and we weren't ready to go. But I mean, it, when you look at that run, I mean, it was just everything. I mean, the offense was just not good at all. And then defensively, I mean, Missouri's a team that's going to try to crash inside and then create open looks through that. When you've got a guy like Mark Mitchell who can go inside, and I mean, he's not going to be much of a three-point threat, but I mean, the way he goes inside, he's going to command one or two guys, and he's going to find somebody open on the perimeter. And when they've got shooters like Tamar Bates, Caleb Grill, even Trent Pierce to a degree, I mean, those guys are going to get those shots. And I mean, Arkansas was like really poor defensively, which in the early season, that was kind of what Arkansas's team was. It was a like pretty strong defensive team that could go on runs. And I mean, it was just not that at all. I mean, Missouri just got whatever it wanted. going to the basket with just minimal resistance, which obviously created those easy looks inside and then created a bunch of open looks from three that, I mean, once Tamar Bates hit that three-pointer that gave Missouri its first lead on the second possession of the game. Because Arkansas, don't forget, had the lead after the first possession. It was a nice little play to create an open look for Jonas Adu inside. And I was like, okay, maybe we're going to be working with a game here. And then it just wasn't. I mean, it's a good Missouri team. They'll probably be ranked today. But when you're playing as poorly as Arkansas did, especially during that stretch, I mean, it's just not gonna work against a team that, you know, plays as fast and as fluent as Missouri does, and the way they play and the way they can hurt you offensively in just a multitude of ways, whether it be from the perimeter or going inside. It's just not gonna work out, and I think you just kind of saw all of that kind of come together in one during that run. I mean, they tried to call a timeout before the first media timeout. I mean, especially, you know, in a moment like that, you're kind of just praying to get to the media timeout so you don't have to burn one. The fact that, you know, John Calipari felt the need to burn a timeout fewer than 4 minutes into the game just kind of shows just how, frankly, bad it was. Because, I mean, Missouri came out ready to go, which I guess if you're looking at it from an Arkansas perspective, you're kind of hoping they're still riding the high from the upset win at Florida. And that just didn't happen. They were ready to go, and Arkansas, you know, just frankly didn't seem like it was.
Do you feel like that speaks more to Missouri's offensive strengths, or is this kind of, does it speak more to a trend we might see in Arkansas's defense? Basically, do you think Arkansas's defense was more of a problem, and do you think this performance was a bigger indicator of issues for Arkansas defensively?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, it's not the first time Arkansas has given up a big run, right? Like against LSU, Arkansas allowed LSU to have a 20-3 run, which that's, you know, what, 2 points better.
Yeah.
So it's not like, I mean, that's consecutive games where you're getting outscored during stretches by at least 17 points, which that just can't happen if you're going to be competitive in these games.
Yeah.
Maybe against LSU, it wasn't as evident because it was a 4-point final score margin. And you go into that game as the favorite, as a team that you frankly probably should be winning. Whereas against Missouri, you see that and it's like, oh man, we came in, you know, as an underdog, and, you know, we're, you know, you're kind of seeing exactly why early on. But the defensive issues that, you know, Arkansas has kind of had in SEC play, I mean, minus, I guess, that Florida game, where they kind of held a really high scoring Florida team to below its season average. And, obviously the offensive rebounds kind of became the difference in that game. But I mean, you saw it against Tennessee, against LSU, not as much against Ole Miss, but then also against obviously Missouri. That, I mean, just defensively, they're struggling to, you know, 3-point defense has been a problem all year, but now it has also kind of become a problem that teams are driving inside, and they got a decent amount of blocks, but again, it's, I mean, they're allowing teams to get these looks, and it's just, I mean, yeah.
It has felt it's felt a lot to me as if whenever, both personnel-wise, they get somebody going that they needed to get going, and then they lose somebody else, whether it's to injury or that person just kind of hits a slump. Same kind of way, in that game, where it was like, as soon as they would get something, it looked like they finally got some offense going, then Missouri would just come back and go on a bigger run. And, you know, speaking personnel-wise, Zvonimir Ivicic had a better game, you know, 14 points, 10 rebounds, he was, what, 2 of 5 from 3. They needed him to get going a little bit, and then you find out, you know, Boogie Fland has a hand injury, so it feels like you plug one hole and another one starts, you know. So I guess with Ivicic specifically, do you think that's something that he can, does this mark a corner turn for him, or is it just kind of too early to know?
It's a little weird with him just because of how much his role has kind of fluctuated and changed throughout the season, and obviously he had the ankle injury that kind of sprung up before the game against Miami and kind of bothered him for a while after that. But I mean, his role has changed so much throughout, you know, the early off season to now, that I wonder if it's hard for him to kind of, you know, get any sort of consistency going, just because of how much it's fluctuated, because he went from being a starter to being, frankly, not an end of bench guy, because he's still in the rotation, but, you know, not playing as many minutes. He went from, you know, in the preseason, John Calipari saying, I don't want Z shooting any threes, to after the Troy game, he's like, I think I want Z shooting 5 threes a game. And I mean, at the time, you could understand why you would make that change, because he was hitting those shots. But I kind of wonder, is it, you know, hard for him to kind of, I guess, adjust to being pulled in all these different directions, and how is he kind of, I guess, adjust to that, just because of how much his role has changed, be it because of, you know, his ankle injury, or because, you know, they want him doing something else offensively. I mean, defensively, you want him, you know, inside being a rim protector. which, you know, he's done, you know, a decent job at. Every once in a while, he'll get a block, but instead of hitting it down and giving his team a chance to grab the rebound, he'll like smack it out to the perimeter, which I believe it was against Florida. It went like straight to Walter Clayton and he hit a three.
Yeah.
And then I think the same thing happened against Tennessee, if I remember correctly. So it's obviously he played well against Missouri. So maybe they've found out exactly what they want him to do. And maybe he's going to start to excel in that role. But I think it's maybe been difficult for him to kind of adjust to all the different kind of ways they're trying to use him. But maybe that is kind of the corner turning moment for him.
Right. That makes sense. And then with Fland, you know, we find out his hand is injured and, you know, Calipari made it sound like he could miss some time. You know, we'll see when the availability report comes out for Wednesday's game, what it says for him. But what exactly did Calipari indicate with that injury? And what is this team, what can they do without him? What are their options if he can't go or if he's limited like he was the other night?
Yeah, if he can't go, I think the natural option is to have DJ Wagner kind of run the point and be the primary ball handler, which is kind of what happened in that game when at different points when I guess Boogie's hand was bothering him more than other points. And obviously, I mean, we're never going to get, you know, exact diagnosis from, you know, John Calipari or anybody on the coaching staff, just because they're not going to want to, you know, put the injury out in public just because that's just, you know, that's just coaching. You know, if he's unable to go, you know, you probably have DJ Wagner running the point. You know, maybe you have John L. Davis do some of that as well. Though he is a little turnover prone. And I know a lot of people have, you know, kind of talked about John L. Davis and kind of his regression from Florida Atlantic. I mean, that was one of the problems he had at Florida Atlantic, was that he was kind of turnover prone. But maybe you give him some run, maybe it'll help him to have the ball in his hands more, who knows. But you know, if Boogie doesn't play, I mean, obviously maybe that's an NBA guy. You could tell his hand was bothering him. Like in the handshake line post game, he was using his left hand, reaching it across his body, so he didn't have to use his right hand in the handshake line. So you can see, like that tells you that it was bothering him, you know, at least a decent amount. But if he's missing time, I mean, obviously that's a huge loss, just because, I mean, he's your floor general. He's the guy you want with the ball in his hands, even though he didn't necessarily play all that well against Missouri. Obviously probably at least in some part due to the hand. But he's also a defensive guy. I mean, he's a good on ball defender. He can get steals and everything like that. So if he misses time, it's going to be, he's a tough guy to replace for sure.
Right. And we'll talk more about Georgia and Oklahoma, their next couple opponents, later this week, but just as an overview, I mean, do you see a decent shot at a win in either of these games, or how much does it, what, I guess, kind of challenges do those teams present for them this week?
Yeah. Georgia is, you know, much improved from what it was last year. Mike White has done a really good job building a roster, and building a team that is top 25 quality. Ran into a tough schedule as soon as, I mean, it was the first time Georgia's been ranked, I think, in 14 years or something. And they immediately get Auburn and Tennessee. Almost kept them in my ballot, but ended up dropping them out just because they did lose both games. You know, I understand the argument to keep them in. They were the first team left off for me. But Georgia, I mean, you've got a freshman like Asa Newell, who is outstanding. Silas Demery's awesome. And then you got a guy like Blue Kane who can hit shots. So Georgia is kind of similar to Missouri in the sense that they can hurt you in some different ways. Maybe not as fast as Missouri. I think they're more methodical. But Georgia is, you know, a team that is, you know, they're good. Same with Oklahoma. I know Oklahoma has struggled in SEC play, just got their first SEC win against South Carolina. But I mean, you don't go 13-0 in non-conference play if you're a bad team.
Right.
And I mean, Jeremiah Fears obviously is an outstanding guard. And yeah, Oklahoma, I mean, Porter Moser's coached in a Final Four. So I mean, it's going to be a tough game. It's obviously, both those teams are very good. The whole SEC is good, right? But I mean, they can win. Like, I think maybe. I mean, if they don't have Boogie Fland, obviously that hurts pretty significantly. It's tough to say. I mean, they're not playing well at the moment, right? I don't think that's a hot take. You don't lose five games in a row if you're not playing well. it's tough to like go out and just be like, oh yeah, they're going to turn it around, because you don't see that right now. I mean, it seems like, I mean, Adu Thiro seemed confident that they would get something going. John Calipari's kind of consistently said like, I'm not panicking. So maybe there's, you know, confidence in that room, but you know, it's tough to, you know, go out and say like, yeah, this is gonna, you know, yeah, they're gonna go out and beat team X, team Y, team Z.
Especially when, in this SEC, yeah, right? Winning. Yeah, this SEC is, so we've talked about it on the show almost every time we talk about basketball, is there are no breaks on this schedule, really. You know, there's nobody that you can look at and say that you can chalk it up to a win, you know, just on paper eyeballing it. And so I think that's part of the big problem, especially if Fland is out of the calculus there, and just the depth issues that they have with just what a shorthanded team they are. So, I mean, I think that's going to be the thing to watch. I think it's interesting that you mentioned the confidence and how Calipari's saying he's not panicking yet, because I mean, the postseason hopes are dwindling. And if they drop both of these again this week, I mean, there's not really a great way that you can salvage that. I guess it's good to see confidence from them, but at the same time, it's kind of now or never, which it felt that way last week, and it was, and they couldn't get it done. So I'll be interested kind of what this week looks like, if they can show, like you said, they haven't shown a ton of evidence that they can sort of turn it around, right? I mean, we have not seen sort of a ton of lights at the end of the tunnel, if that makes sense. You've gotten some good individual performances. Like you said, Fland is a great talent. You've seen moments from Jonas Adu. You've seen moments from Adu Thiro. But it feels like I was saying earlier, it feels like every time you stop one area of bleeding, somewhere else opens up. So, you know, I think this week is going to be so telling for what they're able to do for the rest of the season, which it still feels like it's pretty early. And yet here we are, really, it feels like this is, like I said, now or never. I want to tell our audience, you know, you guys can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com, where you can find all of Anthony's basketball coverage. He's been going on the road all over the SEC for these games. We're the most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports. Our award-winning team of reporters and photographers bring subscribers the most trusted Razorback news. We have analysis, latest in recruiting, and unique stories about your favorite Razorback teams. You can subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. And like I said, you'll find all of Anthony's coverage there. We've also got women's basketball coverage from Ethan Westerman, who's going to join us here in a minute. Anthony, before I let you go, I have to ask you about your favorite area of discourse from this weekend, which is John Calipari's suits. We've had a lot of people, I've seen a lot of internet chatter over Calipari wearing a blue suit jacket. I was talking to my boyfriend about this over the weekend, and we talked about how, since it is pretty rare now for coaches to wear suits at all, I feel like maybe people forgot that coaches haven't always worn the team color every time. I mean, like, I went back through our photo server, and you've got Mike Anderson. Looking back at a lot of Mike Anderson's fashion choices, he usually would incorporate like a red tie or a red pocket square, but he had blue going on. He had some games where there wasn't, you know, there was one where it was kind of like a tan jacket and then just like a Razorback pin. Sydney, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I wanted to say that it was funny because I was watching the game, and my mom looks at what he's wearing and she goes, I think he's sending a message.
Oh my gosh. Your mom is on the dark side. That's so funny.
Well, she's from Kentucky.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, Anthony. I wanted to see what you made of this.
I think I'm in the Corey camp.
Yeah.
And saying that, like, I think people have maybe gotten used to just seeing, you know, coaches wearing the quarter zips and, you know, seeing them in the coaching, like the team colors and everything. Like, I can understand being like, oh yeah, be passionate about your team, rah. But like, he's dressing nice.
A blue suit is like a neutral, good. Right?
Yeah, blue, I mean, suit, blue the blue suit looks nice.
Yeah, I like
a
blue suit.
I'm a proponent of a nice blue suit. I think wear a blue suit to like every wedding I go to. Like,
I think
that's
it's
not me sending any message. I just think it looks good.
Right. I think it's one of those things where if they were winning, nobody would say anything.
I would agree with
it's
that.
The same thing with Kalen DeBoer wearing a t-shirt coaching for Alabama. If he were winning, no one would care what he wore.
Yes.
So it's it's one of those funny storylines that, you know, people will forget about, but it's one of those internet subjects that comes up. But Anthony, thank you for joining us to talk a little basketball. I know you'll be back later this week to preview those games a little bit more in depth as Arkansas hosts Georgia and Oklahoma this week. And here in a bit, we will have Ethan Westerman join us to talk some spring sports after a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. I'm here with Ethan Westerman in studio. First, I want to tell you guys about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Ethan, spring sports are a little bit of a refresher for Arkansas as both of the basketball teams struggle. It's funny, it feels like in football we talk about wait till basketball, and then we get to basketball and we talk about wait till baseball and wait till softball. And, you know, I've written before in Hogs Illustrated about how Arkansas is a spring sports school, truly, mm-hmm. you know, more, even more so than football or basketball. There's with so much interest in baseball and softball especially, and then with track and you know, even now golf and gymnastics, how well they do. It feels like all of Arkansas's best postseason chances come in these spring sports.
Yeah, and it's funny because it is a cycle that happens, I think, every single year where we're like just kind of ready for it. But I think we're feeling it extra this year because I was telling somebody yesterday, I don't remember the last time that every men's basketball game and every women's game I've been at, I have been having to sift through the record book year by year to figure out if it's the worst since.
Yeah.
The worst since, what's the worst conference start since? When's the worst overall start since? The worst whatever statistics since? I mean, I think people are feeling it extra this year because it's just not going how people wanted it to, at least the men's and women's basketball seasons. But There is time for some things to get figured out, the ship to get righted. I've been telling people, especially with the men's team, like, you don't want to keep doing this to yourself where you're stacking losses, but all it takes is stacking wins. Like, I mean, that's the way you get out of it. If you stack a lot of losses, you got to stack a lot of wins. But the more losses they stack, the harder the hill comes to climb. So there's still time for some of these, you know, for the basketball teams to turn it around. But, man, I am ready for these teams that are just very consistent. Like, it's kind of a product, I think, at this point that we know what we're getting generally.
Right. Like, we can expect, you know, we've got to block out June for Omaha and potentially for Oklahoma City, even though our softball hasn't been able to get over that hump yet and make it to the Women's College World Series. But it's something you always have to kind of plan for and budget for because you know there's a chance that they might get there. Yeah.
Which is crazy because you think about it in those sports, how few teams actually make it to, like, you know, March Madness in basketball, there's a whole handful of teams that make it to that, to where it's not too crazy to be thinking about that. But with baseball, softball, there's eight teams in the whole nation. So the fact that we are, like, always, like, let's – I mean, it is in comparison as if, like, you know, all they did for NCAA men's basketball tournament was they seeded an Elite Eight, and they said go to the Elite Eight. If we were every year like, oh, yeah, we got to be in case, that's what happens with these teams. I know softball hasn't gotten there yet. They're on the doorstep every single year, it feels like. Baseball – they've been to Omaha a lot. The two teams are kind of in a similar spot where they've been you know, the last 2 years really good, and then just postseason didn't go well. But you do always have to be ready for the fact that it could happen.
Yeah, I want to dive a little deeper on softball with you since you do such a good job covering softball for us. We included softball in this spring sports preview issue of Hogs Illustrated that we just got in print. You can get a single issue at shop.nwaonline.com. You can order single issues of Hogs Illustrated, or you can subscribe to the magazine on our website, wholehogsports.com. And we decided to do kind of a spring sports preview, excluding baseball, because baseball gets its own issue, which is our next one. We're finishing up the stories for that this week, so we're really excited about our baseball preview issue. But we wanted to do a little bit of these spring sports. You know, we included gymnastics, and we included indoor and outdoor track, but those are technically considered winter sports because gymnastics starts in January, but they end in the spring, so I kind of looped them in under spring semester. But yeah. Softball really is among the highlights of the spring semester for Arkansas. And so, you know, when you were working on the preview for this, I asked you to pick, you know, three-ish players to watch, you know, names for people to know. And you gave me seven because you said I cannot decide. So I guess walk me through this roster and some of these new players, whether new or old, new or returning, that people need to know about and why it was so hard to narrow it down.
It was really hard for me because there are great returners on this team and like a few elite freshmen. Like I have no doubt they're going to be really good freshmen, which that's always, you know, like, you know, a fine line to walk because people, you don't want to overhype a player or something. These two played for Team USA in the summer and they are elite. Like, I'm just letting you know, I've seen them play in the fall. They're really good, to where it was like, if I don't include them on the best players, like, I'm making a mistake because they are going to be among their best players. So it was a really hard line to walk because they had such good returners too. And so diving through their returners, it all starts at first base with Bree Ellis. She had a phenomenal year last year after transferring from Auburn. Basically, all of her numbers were up. She didn't have the same home run numbers I think she had her freshman year at Auburn, but they were all better from her sophomore season. And it was just improvement in all these different categories, doubles, singles, her average. She had a phenomenal year. She was an All-American. I mean, her first time to get that honor. So it all starts there. She is the vocal leader of the team. She's going to be the one that people circle, but you really can't do that with this lineup too, because there's really good all up and down. Then Reagan Johnson, she is, in my opinion, the most underrated outfielder in softball right now. I mean, there was a rankings that came out by D1 Softball last week, and I get it. These rankings are hard to rank preseason the top players in the country, but she's at number 18, and she has a chance to, like, by a lot by the end of her career, be the hits leader at Arkansas. She's a phenomenal table setter at the top. She's a slapper, and she just sets the tone. She's a pretty good defender too. She actually was perfect on stolen base attempts in her entire high school and college career up until last year. She got thrown out, I think, like her last two. It was really weird, but she is really fast. She's dynamic. She's certainly, in my opinion, like prime for, like, she could be an All-American this year. Kennedy Miller, returning at catcher. She's really good. D1 Softball in their rankings had her the number 4 catcher in the nation in the preseason. She, her freshman year, had some ups and downs, but it started so strong that it already cemented her to, like, this is going to be a player to watch for years to come. And she's one of those players that I think people talk about, oh, sophomore slump. I don't think that's going to happen for her. I think, like, we were just kind of, like, scratching the surface last year, to where it's not like there is the – she didn't position herself to where there really could be a huge sophomore slump, in my opinion. Some other players to watch, Kaylee Wyckoff. She's a transfer from Texas Tech. She is really good. She's important for them because she can play so many different places in the field. Basically, like, the only thing she can't do is pitch. Like, she could go anywhere. And they're saying it's going to be big for her this year that she that she can catch some, because Kennedy Miller, who just talked about, she can have some days of rest, because that is a lot on your body to catch over and over and over. So that'll be big for them. And then those two freshmen that I did mention, Ella McDowell and Cam Harrison, elite. McDowell's an infielder. She can hit. She can defend. She's a leader as a freshman. She's really good. Cam Harrison, just a dominant pitcher. She was, if you're ever Texas Gatorade High School Player of the Year, like, you're really good. I actually broke this down in the summer in a story, like, going through previous winners of that, and they all, like, I mean, it's a who's who of who was really good in college softball. So She's great. And then I'm leaving off. Oh, Robin Heron, left-handed pitcher. She is. I talked about Reagan Johnson being underrated. She's not on anybody's list right now of like top pitchers, and I just think it's kind of crazy. She's had a huge ascent last year, and I think that she has all the tools to keep it going. It's just a matter of with her. It's always been for her, just, you know, gaining that confidence, and I think that she's got it. So there you go. I just hit you with a lot of players to watch. But that's, like you said, like, that was my problem. Like, there's too many good ones that it's like, if you leave off somebody, I'm like doing them a disservice.
Right. And I remember, you know, you mentioned the pitching. Last season, it was one of the storylines. I remember you talking to Coach Dyfel about this before the season, was they no longer had, you know, a lights out dominant pitcher that, like, they had had in Shanice Dels and Mary Half. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those pitchers that they'd been used to having, and how in college softball it can be really hard to make a postseason run when you don't have somebody like that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, last season they didn't have that. That's not to say they didn't have any good pitchers. It's just a different sort of level. It's a different way you can use some of these arms. So where do you see Robin Heron this season? Do you see her on that level, or how do they want to kind of use this pitching staff? And who else besides Robin should people know about on the staff?
Yeah, well, I think that she has very much the potential to be the staff ace. But I don't think it's like how you think about a lot of teams. Like last year, Alabama had Kayla Beaver, who she threw her arm out some weekends because they needed her that much. Even back whenever Arkansas had Shanice Dels, it was kind of the same way. There would be weekends that I was like, goodness, her arm is got to be so sore right now because they just relied on her so much. I think that they have an ace in Robin Heron, but they have enough like solid other pitchers that you can turn and change looks. And one's a lefty. She's the lefty, Robin is, and then the rest are righties. I think that Cam Harrison just mentioned her. She's going to be right there in the mix. Peyton Burnham, she's a freshman. I'd expect her to be in the mix. Reese Berline, I don't know if she hasn't gotten talked about a lot because she missed a lot of last year, but she was really good as a freshman at Mississippi State, and she should be back, and who knows what the potential could be there. That's the thing with them this year. There's enough that I'm like, sometimes you go into a season and you're like cautious about like, okay, maybe a lot of pitchers, but are there any that we trust? I feel like with this group, there's almost like you trust them all. It's just a matter of who's going to kind of break out. Like Morgan Linestock for them last year, I did not see this. I mean, she was an All-American, and I didn't see that one coming. And it's just Courtney has a knack as a pitching coach. There's a lot of these pitchers that I don't think are really high on people's radars, and then the season rolls around, and they're just lights out. And I think that there's a whole handful of candidates on this staff. But I think Robin, yeah, she's the lead to be like kind of their weekend ace, but I just don't see them really needing to throw anybody's arm out this year. They have a deep pitching staff, and they also have another freshman, Lexi King, that kind of rounds it out. So they have five that I think are all going to get to pitch.
This is something that it's still new, but it doesn't feel new because we had so much time to talk about it in football. But Oklahoma and Texas, it's weird to say, oh, this is their first season, because it feels like they've been part of the SEC for longer than that now after football. But Oklahoma and Texas, we've talked on the show a lot about how they changed the calculus in the SEC in a bunch of different sports. Softball, maybe more than most. I mean, it's up there with how successful those two programs are. For a program like Arkansas that has not been able to break through to the Women's College World Series yet, despite having great seasons, despite having a lot of success in the SEC, it's troubling almost, because the road is about to get so much harder. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be even harder to break through now with those two teams in. So I guess, how do you see this shaking out? How do you see this impacting Arkansas with them now and their path trying to get to Oklahoma City for the first time?
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing is, I feel like in my brain with all these sports right now, like, I've kind of adopted to like Texas is in the SEC, but Arkansas just hasn't played Oklahoma. Like, in, unless I'm blanking anything, they're like oddly a Big 12 team, like, still in my head. Mm-hmm. Yet, but like, I know they're SEC, but softball is where it's going to become real for me. Like, that's whenever I'm gonna be like, okay, this is SEC, probably top dog. Them and Texas are elite. I mean, I don't think it's even a question that softball is impacted more than any other sport by these two additions. I mean, they've played each other in the national championship two of the past 3 years. Oklahoma's the four-time reigning national champs. I mean, it doesn't get much better. And I think for Arkansas, it is kind of, you know, how do you maintain your conference supremacy? I know they haven't had the Women's College World Series appearances to show for it, but the past 4 years, Arkansas is the winningest team in the SEC, in SEC play. Tennessee is right behind them. So they're kind of one and two. And you just wonder, like, Texas, Oklahoma immediately come in, and you think that Arkansas, Tennessee maybe move down a notch. But, you know, sports are weird. Maybe it's going to be a hard transition for Oklahoma and Texas to the SEC because they aren't used to playing this much quality. I mean, the top of the Big 12 has always been really good, but week in and week out in the SEC, you're playing somebody who can beat
it's
you.
Deeper,
it's
yeah.
just, it's a lot deeper. And I wonder if that takes a toll on them. Just the, it's a big mental grind. I mean, the fact that you can never take a game off. You can't in any college sport, but I mean, I think you get what I mean, that in the SEC, like, you really have to bring your A game to win. And I think that, yeah, for Arkansas, you wonder if they can get in like a similar situation of like how Alabama's been the past years. Alabama used to run the conference. They've in recent years been in the regular season below Arkansas, below Tennessee, but they keep on making the Women's College World Series because they just piece it together at the right time. I know a lot of it comes down to seeding of the NCAA tournament, etc. But they've figured out a way to get there. And you wonder if Arkansas, if they start to maybe, if they take that seat in the conference where they're like just trying to be in the top, you know, regular season 5-6, if it doesn't maybe even benefit them that they are just well tested and ready for the postseason. Because I think, you know, if anything, it really just adding OU and Texas hurts where you might finish in the regular season SEC standings, but I think it probably helps you with postseason. I mean, you've seen it all. You aren't going to be after you play Oklahoma in a series, you aren't going to be afraid of anybody the rest of the year, which I don't think they're ever afraid, but I mean, you get what I mean, like, it just gives you confidence that you've seen the best of the best. So it is a challenge, though, and Arkansas does play Oklahoma this year in a 3-game series. It's actually the home conference opener, so that'll be a chance to see how Arkansas stacks up against truly the best of the best.
That is a hard way to start SEC play. Yeah. That's I didn't realize it was that early in
yeah,
the schedule.
It is. But. Yeah, and the funny thing is it is their home SEC opener, and they only play a few non-conference games at home before that. They usually have more like home invitationals in the non-conference, but they just didn't this year. They wanted to go on the road and play in some different invitationals, and so Oklahoma's are going to be one of the first chances for fans to get their eyes on. That's going to kind of be how they ring in Bogle this year. It's going to be the first real true series there.
Yeah, that's going to be a packed house for sure because yeah. people will want to see them.
Which I want to mention, it's kind of crazy to me. We started off this, you were talking about how softball kind of takes out of these spring sports that, you know, baseball has its own issue, like how it's taken a highlight headlining role. It's just crazy because they literally, like, less than a decade ago were like, you could count the fans by the tens in the stands. Like, it's just really grown, and it's cool to see how the sport has really elevated as TV networks have promoted it more.
Right. And what else has grown is gymnastics. I mean, this season, for the first time starting this afternoon, they're going to have all of their home meets at Bud Walton, which they've, over the last 3 years or so, they've been having at least one, maybe a couple meets at Bud Walton every season. And now all five are going to be there. And their first one is this afternoon. And, you know, Oklahoma's also elite in gymnastics.
Yeah.
They're number one in the country right now. But, you know, Arkansas is off to a pretty good start. I think their first meet was maybe not the kind of score they wanted. They were in the 195 range, and I think they wanted to start a little bit better than that. You know, last season they had a program record for scores of 197 or above, and then this year they want to get some 198s in there. That's mm-hmm. something that Jordan Weber talked about, you know, that being a goal for this team. But you and I were texting during Friday night. We were both watching the
yes.
gymnastics. I'm helping cover gymnastics for the newspaper, as well as some stories on wholehogsports.com. And so I was covering it, and you were tuned in.
I was spectating. I don't know much about gymnastics. I am very impressed by everything going on. You told me to be the judge and predict what score is going to happen. No clue.
Well, what I've learned, I've been learning a ton about the sport because, you know, I've been a passive viewer. I like to watch during the Olympics. I mean, I'm by no means, you know, I could never judge gymnastics, like you said.
Yeah.
So I've been learning a ton as I've been covering this team, and it is unbelievably complex. I mean, unbelievably so. The amount of things that they are required to get in their routines, the way the scoring works, how they have to execute, what they have to include, it is unbelievably complicated. I am amazed that they're able to come up with routines that hit all these requirements and then actually perform them well.
Yeah.
And so it's been fun to watch this team, knowing how successful they were last season. They set so many records last season, and they bring back so much talent. And then they add this superstar freshman in Jocelyn Robertson, who, you know, was on the, she was the Team USA alternate at the Olympics, and she has been fantastic for them. She won the all-around in their quad meet. She tied for the win there, and then she finished second of two with a girl from Auburn who is also has competed on the national team, not at the Olympics, but in some other world competitions before. And, you know, she's definitely the real deal. You know, she's lived up to the hype. She's competing in the all around. She's been super fun to watch, but it's been cool to learn a little bit more about this sport covering it. I'm looking forward to their meet this afternoon. And then they host LSU on Friday, which LSU, I think, has been ranked number two. They're incredible. You know, they're the defending national champions. So that's going to be a huge meet at Bud Walton. And then also in this issue, we have some stuff about track. Matt is filling in, covering some track. You know, Bob Holt did such a tremendous job covering Arkansas track and field for decades. And Matt and the rest of us really felt strongly that the coverage should not drop off in Bob's absence, that, you know, that team should still be covered, that it should be covered well. And so Matt's been doing a really good job.
And he went to, was it Razorback Invitational?
I think so. They're all called some variation of Razorback, Tyson, Arkansas.
It was in Fayetteville. That was in their facility. Reading Matt's recap of it, I mean, he said that there doesn't want to be any drop off of it. Matt did a phenomenal job I was just learning left and right stuff about even just the history of the program. And it's really cool that, like, this storied of a program, this dominant of a program, they can still have, like, people come in and do something new, set a new record. It's just, it's incredible. And I think that, if people want to keep up with how the track teams are doing, I think Matt's going to do an outstanding job. And really, really cool to see just how there's, you know, these sports that take the main, you know, like, discourse, football, basketball, baseball, but there's a lot of people who, you know, behind the scenes love and keep up with these smaller sports, and it becomes a part of them. And it was really cool to see kind of the reception of some of the track coverage that Matt had. There's a lot of people that they do read this stuff, and it's really exciting to see that, you know, that these sports with these super talented athletes have, they have fan bases too. It's just not always in the you know, a big headline for football is always going to take over the day. But these sports, I mean, they go through the grind every year too, and there's a lot of people that love to keep up with them.
Well said. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit of the college football national championship, because as we said, college football, you know, is the headline grabber. And hey, we're going to be tuned in.
It's national championship day.
It is. How could you not be excited? Yeah. So, and I know Sydney's going to want to weigh in there. So after a word from our sponsors, we'll talk a little bit of national championship football.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back to our daily podcast. We are going to talk a little bit of national championship game predictions, thoughts, feelings. Sydney's over there. She's pumped to talk some Notre Dame. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass, serving their community since 1971. Bentonville Glass is committed, professional, and versatile. Looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas, looking for skilled craftsmanship, you can choose Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Ethan, national championship, you're going to be at my house to watch the second half. How do you see this game? Because I feel like all of the media I have consumed about it leading up, you know, other podcasts I listen to, some stories I've been reading, it feels very much like everyone is all in on Ohio State. And I guess, what is your read on this game?
Yeah, well, I think it's no coincidence that the top two teams in points allowed this season are meeting in a national championship game. I think that it just goes to prove that defense truly does win you championships. And I think that's why people might be sleeping on Notre Dame a little bit too much in this game. They have a really solid defense. And I think that, you know, people are really hyping up this Ohio State offense. You know, they have the phenom receiver. They have, you know, Will Howard, who's been playing well. But, like, I just think that maybe discounting how much a good defense can make a good offense, you know, off their game. I think that people are really maybe pushing the Ohio State envelope too far. Like, I mean, what was the line at this game right now? It's 8.5
points.
It's
high, yeah.
8.5 points for a national championship game between these two teams is, I mean, it's, I think that people are maybe discrediting Notre Dame in the season that they've had. I know that it's so crazy that they lost to Northern Illinois, and I'm hoping, I almost like hope they win just so that Northern Illinois can do the whole like transitive property, the very easiest transitive property.
I hope they put off a banger tweet about if Notre Dame were to win. I hope they post an elite national champion tweet. They have a claim.
And we were in Stillwater the day that they beat them.
We were at a Smitty's.
We love that coach. We love the Northern Illinois coach who was he like weeping?
He was crying. Oh, of course he was crying. Yeah, I would have cried. I cried watching him cry. And yeah. We went to Smitty's after the Oklahoma State game. We caught the end of it having burgers before we got back, headed back from Stillwater. And yeah, I was crying. Like, it was amazing.
Back in the day, whenever we were, like, throwing Notre Dame, I was like, oh, this is going to be a terrible season for them. And here they are, national championship. But shout out Northern Illinois. You did it. Yeah, where am I? I'm chasing rabbits. I think Notre Dame's a good team. I think maybe people are getting a little bit too, I know, just recency bias on Ohio State.
Yeah.
Which I get it. Like, recency bias needs to be a thing because you need to see how teams have been playing recently. But I think Texas kind of set the blueprint. Like, they didn't beat them, but I said this whenever I was on the podcast with Matt before that game. I think the way to beat Ohio State, you got to really play the possession game and try and control the clock as much as you can. I think Notre Dame's the type of team that can do that, that can really just try and chip away and make the game longer than Ohio State wants it to be. So,
exactly. We'll see. Sydney's got some Notre Dame propaganda to spread, I think. What do you have to add?
No, I was going to say, I think people forget Ohio State is Notre Dame's biggest rival. So if there's anyone they wanted to play in this championship game, it was Ohio State. I mean, we play them every year. They're our biggest rival. And last year, you know, didn't come out the way we wanted it to. We lost in like the last second on a really bad play, if I should say. So we're looking for some redemption in this game against Ohio State. So I think it will be close. I mean, we study their game film every year. They're the one team we want to beat. So I think people are forgetting that when they're you know, getting the spread on this. I'm just like, where's everyone's head going? I mean, the whole country's thinking about this game, but forgetting that we play them every year.
Yeah, I think I'm not expecting a blowout the way that I think some people are. I mean, maybe not blowout's not the right word. I think some people are maybe predicting that, but I think, you know, I'm expecting it to be closer than I think some, because I mean, Ohio State's offense, you mentioned Texas. I mean, that was not a tremendous offensive performance across the board. I think it, like you said, I think it's going to come down a lot to defense. And I think if Notre Dame can literally possess the ball, like if they can keep Ohio State's offense off the field, mm-hmm. that's going to be really important. Because the other thing too is Notre Dame has some injury problems, especially on the offensive line. And I think if you cannot protect Riley Leonard, if you cannot use the run game the way they want to, that's an issue. Sydney, you have something to add?
I mean, I was going to say, I mean, this whole season, starting with the first game, we've had injury after injury. But I think that just, I mean, no pun intended, but I think that's why we really are the Fighting Irish, because you have so many backup players coming in just ready to start. And I think it comes from Marcus Freeman's instilling that mentality to all of his players of just, you know, when you start, you're prepared. I mean, he has all of his backups prepared to go and start. And I think when you're watching a game like Georgia Notre Dame, you know, people were saying, well, you know, that backup for Georgia is going to come in, he's going to be ready to play, you know, because he's playing at Georgia. And he didn't. But for Notre Dame players, I think that's something they don't talk about, is they have constantly these backups coming in, and they kept winning those playoff games with their backups.
Right.
I look at this. You mentioned, you know, some offensive line injuries. I'm curious to see if Notre Dame gets creative with running the quarterback, because he actually is like a dual threat quarterback. I mean, like he might be a better runner than passer. And so
for sure,
I'm just curious to see if they're going to be able to get creative to prolong drives, because I do think there is the potential. Both these teams have the top passing defenses as well, by the way. So I just think the running game is where it's going to be decided. Like, you know, if one of these teams can break through and somehow have a great day throwing the ball around, yeah, that's they're probably going to win. But I just don't see the passing game being electric for either side. I think it's going to be decided on the ground, and maybe if getting the quarterback run game is how Notre Dame wins it.
Right, and for Notre Dame especially, the run game is so key because, like you said, Riley Leonard, he's not a bad passer. He is not a great downfield passer, and they do not have great receivers. Their receivers do fine. They have some moments. They are not, you know, game-breaking receivers. They've been up and down. You know, there's been some concerns there. And so I think, like you said, the run game, especially the quarterback run game, is going to be huge. Ohio State's going to know that. Ohio State's going to be prepared for that. How they actually are able to execute is going to be the story of the game. Sydney, what did you want to add?
I was going to say, I mean, I'm sure Ohio State's prepared for it, but Riley Leonard's one of those players that when I watched him in the first game opening against A&M and found out he was our leading rusher of that game, I couldn't believe it. I feel like he kind of goes under the radar with his running because he's not the most fast runner on the team. But at the same time, he can go a little under the radar if you let him. So I'll be surprised tonight if he does a bunch of that. But I think they're going to utilize some players that they hadn't all season. I think Jordan Faison's going to play a big role tonight. He's one of those players that he's already a national champion in lacrosse. But he's one of those guys that if you let him slip away, as small as he is, I think he's like 5'8", 5'9", that's going to be a problem for them.
Right. I mean, I think my prediction is I do think Ohio State does get the win. I do not think it is going to be as difficult for Notre Dame as people think.
I'm the same way. Like I give the edge to Ohio State, but I wouldn't, like, the line goes to say that you should be surprised if Notre Dame wins or something, and I'm like, I wouldn't be shocked.
I wouldn't either.
I think that they have a good team. I do think this game it all boils down to this. Like we preach all this stuff about football, and then the games are decided by possessions and turnovers and mistakes. It's who's going to make the most mistakes. And I think Will Howard and Riley Leonard, both of them, it's like...
Both of them are good for an interception in this game.
So I'm like, which defense is going to come up with those big plays? And, you know, of course, Ohio State did that against Texas. Like the big... what's his name? I'm blanking. The guy with the touchdown.
Which Ohio State's?
Yeah, yeah.
Sawyer?
Yes. Who's going to have the play like
that?
Jack
Sawyer.
I think it's Jack Sawyer.
Now I'm like, what if I'm talking about a completely different player that did something else? Yeah, it's Jack Sawyer.
Who's going to be the Jack Sawyer of this game? That's what I'm trying to say.
Jack Sawyer is going to be the Jack Sawyer of this game.
If Jack Sawyer is the Jack Sawyer of this game, then Ohio State going to win. But
no, it's going to be Jeremiah Love.
Or it could be Jeremiah Love. Like
he's your favorite. He's whose jersey you wanted, right, Sydney? Was it Love that you wanted the jersey of?
No, Xavier Watts.
Xavier Watts, of course. But you got the custom jersey with your name on it. I saw that on Instagram.
I did.
Is that the one you have on today?
No, I'm wearing Jordan Clark's.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Yeah, Sydney's got the custom Notre Dame jersey. That was a good Christmas gift, I think. But
these Fighting Irish, like Sydney said, they're fighting. They're fighting. Can they fight hard enough tonight to get a win? We will stay tuned and see. But I'm looking forward to it. I love a good national championship.
I hope we get a good one. I hope it goes how I think it's going to go.
Don't give me Georgia TCU.
Oh my God! I went. I was at that game with my family. We left at halftime.
Oh wow!
It was so bad, and we didn't want. Like, we didn't want to. We wanted to. It was terrible. We were like, we would rather watch this with a little beverage at the hotel. Like this is just.
Let's just get out of here. Yeah. Let's get a good national championship. Who played last year in it? why am I playing?
I feel insane. This is how bad my memory is.
Oh, no, it was Michigan and Washington.
Oh, yes. And that was not a good game either. Yeah. Michigan had it handled. And everybody kind of knew they would.
I love it how as an SEC, somebody who covers the SEC watches them, it's like, I forget who plays in these games. Whenever
I just
have
a terrible
SEC
memory.
Teams.
I mean, I don't remember who Arkansas played last season. My memory is awful. So, Michigan, I mean, that was another one where I don't think we didn't get a fantastic game. It felt like it kind of went the way we thought it would with Michigan. It felt like it was Michigan's game.
Give me an Alabama-Georgia where Tua comes in and does this.
I mean, I don't even necessarily need an SEC team in it. It's just, I think, I kind of like that there's not one. I kind of appreciate that for all the dominance that there's been with the SEC in the playoff era especially. And I just, you know, I like that now. I guess it's been two in a row now without an SEC team.
Yeah, which, you know, it's a trend. It only takes two to make it to be a trend. But, I just like just give me a good game. That's all I'm asking for tonight. And I think that these two teams are kind of stacked up to where I don't. But then again, I would have said the same thing about Ohio State, Oregon. And look at how that went. But I think we there's a good chance we get a good game tonight whenever you have two good defenses like this.
Yeah. Sydney?
I was going to say, this rivalry runs deep. I think it's going to be to the marker like it was with Penn State with Notre Dame. It's going to be down to the wire. I promise you it is.
Yeah. I'm hoping, like Ethan said, that we get a good game. You know, the last few games, the semifinals were great. You know, some games before that were maybe not so entertaining, and there was so much discourse about that I hope we are rewarded with this from this long postseason with an entertaining game.
Shout out Texas, because they are the only team, I think, their entire journey through the playoff, they had good games. Even that Clemson game, it got entertaining.
For sure.
But those, like, you look at the playoff this year, and I know Penn State, Notre Dame, that was a great game too. But literally, like, all the other good games all involve Texas, I feel like. So, you know, let's see what Ohio State and Notre Dame have for us. Looking forward to it. I will be at Christina's for the second half. Got plans the first half. And I guess tomorrow, I think I'm hosting this podcast tomorrow.
Yeah.
I will come back with a report on, you know, how our national championship game viewing experience went.
Yeah, you'll have to come back and just eat every word that we just said.
Yeah.
That's just how it's going to go. But yeah, Ethan will be in the host chair tomorrow. Like I said, Matt Jones, your regular host, will be back on Friday. I'll be here Wednesday and Thursday, and we're looking forward to talking some Razorback sports for the rest of the week. We appreciate you joining us.